Hi, Miguel. My name is Amanda Hefner, and I'm a master's in educational technology student at UT Brownsville. And I've asked for you to help me with an interview on some topics related to information technology consulting. I know that you have a lot of experience with working with open source applications in K-12 environment, particularly Moodle I'm interested in. And I work with a similar system at my school district, so I'm very interested to know how you have gotten the buy-in, stakeholder buy-in, how you've worked with the district employees and IT staff to develop the system to meet your needs, and any advice that you have on consulting in that field. So I'll let you take over for the topics. You'll see are in a map diagram, and that's just a brainstorm for you to look at and answer what you feel is relevant. And starting in the first section, you'll see the background information. So please give us an overview of your background.
Okay. Amanda, first of all, thank you for inviting me and allowing me to share my experiences. I'm thrilled to be chatting with you, especially since you're based out of San Antonio. And I was thinking earlier today how funny that we're going to be having this conversation via Skype. Skype enables us to have this conversation whether I'm in across the world or not. But, of course, the benefit of being able to record the our conversation is great. A little background, our experience, my professional background, I think every time I look at my experience, it really didn't all click together or come together for me until I started writing about my classroom experiences. About my classroom experiences, I was doing fun things with kids using technology. I was an English teacher reading English language arts, bilingual ESL, and working with elementary students. And I encouraged them to write and share, and I would write and share with them. And I really didn't wake up to the power of writing about what you're doing in your classroom until maybe my fourth or fifth year of teaching. And what I did was I sat down and I wrote about what my kids were doing with technology in the classroom, because I read a lot of great magazines like Learning and Leading with Technology, ISTE's publication, and TCEA's Tech Edge, which at the time wasn't a full-color journal, just sort of a newsletter kind of thing. And it was just I said, you know, I can tell a story like that. I can describe what's going on in my classroom. And I started describing, and wow, what a powerful experience it was for me to write about what I was doing in the third grade classroom, what I had done in my sixth grade classroom or fifth grade classrooms, and share those stories. And as I learned more, I started to share that in my writing. And I started publishing articles every year, and people would say, wow, Miguel, how do you write so much? And I think back to that, and I think, you know, I wasn't writing hardly anything. I was just writing about, I guess, five or six articles a year. But because people saw it in print, they said, wow, you know, this is a lot of stuff. And I get that reaction. Now when I think I started blogging 3 years ago, and I started blogging because, to be honest, and this is a story I tell every time I present, I was driving down the highway. I was driving down 281 in San Antonio. It was about 735, 740. Bumper-to-bumper traffic, and I was thinking, I had just found out about blogging, and I just found out about all the exciting ways that we can use technology. I guess it was the Web 2.0 revolution, even though Web 2.0 has fallen out of favor as a term. But it was this whole idea that we could read-write web, we were able to collaborate, connect with other people at a distance, and do so in a way that was very different from the way we had done things in the past. And that people were having great conversations about how they could change what they were doing in the classroom, how they could change what they were doing at the district level. And I just felt overwhelmed. You know, 3 years ago, I had heard of Moodle, but I had not actually used it much. And you mentioned earlier, before we started recording the conversation, that you had been using Moodle for 6 years. Well, that's way more experience than I have with Moodle. And as I was driving down the highway, I had a panic attack. I didn't realize it was a panic attack, but it was. And since I couldn't go anywhere, I think a part of me, the part of me that likes to write, said, well, what is it that's causing you to feel this way? And so I started reflecting on that, and I realized I'd been thinking about blogging and all the new technologies that are available to connect people. And I realized that the only way to get a handle on this, to better understand, was to sort of just collapse this whole idea that I was the expert. And as soon as I got away from that, as soon as I got away from being the instructional technology director, you know, the guy that's supposed to know how to use technology in the classroom for everything, to help kids learn, help teachers teach, it became such a liberating experience. And so I started writing in my blog and sharing about my experiences. And eventually I came to appreciate how I could share my story and my journey through all of this. And wow, it's been a fantastic experience, because I started writing to understand, blogging to understand, and it brought me in contact with so many people. And I'm just completely overwhelmed on that. All of that has sort of, my interest is really in learning how to use different technologies. When I was in the classroom, I was interested in seeing how I could use them to facilitate teaching and learning, how to engage kids, how to, you know, be excited about what I was doing. Getting access to a real audience always drove me crazy. I wanted my kids to be able to write and publish their work, and it would take 6 months to do that, which by the time my kids were ready to write and publish, after doing all the prep work, it was too late. We would never get any answers back. So we started doing the local newspapers, everything else, and that just wasn't effective. But doing it online made the difference for us and made the difference for me. So that's what has pushed me over time, is how can we share ideas, how can we connect with other people and collaborate with others using technologies that are available to us. Pretty much anything that falls into that area. Another area of interest for me is how can we get away from the cost, the high cost that we have in using technology tools in schools. You know, when people go to a conference, they line up outside of the vendor, or they line up outside the vendor booths that are going to provide them with the most free stuff. As a teacher, I was always looking for what was free, didn't cost any money. And the reason why is that, you know, I only had a certain budget for my classroom, and we don't get paid a lot as classroom teachers, so I wanted to be able to use technologies with my students that wouldn't cost a lot of money. So I think I really, this really led me into free open source software. And I've been fortunate that I've had a chance to work with some talented staff. And, of course, they happen to be on my team. I can take credit for hiring them, if nothing else, and being open to learning from them. But they have so much to teach. One of the things that they decided to teach me about was Moodle. And they also taught me about content management systems and MySQL and PHP. And I'm not going to claim that I'm an expert in any of these things. You probably have more experience in using Moodle and putting in all the add-ons, or I forget what they're called in Moodle.
The modules.
The modules, there you go. And having all of that is just there. And so I'm not an expert on all of these. I like to bring those in and use them. And blogging has helped me realize that I'm a shallow kind of guy. I like to look at lots of different things, try out different things, work with people on projects that are short-term. Long-term stuff doesn't grab me that much. And it's just, that's just who I am. So maybe that'll change as I get older, but we'll see. In terms of online presence and organizations, I've been heavily involved with the Texas Computer Education Association. I've had disagreements in terms of how quickly they're moving. I think what it comes down to is that organizations move slowly. people can move, as individuals can move a lot faster. And in a lot of ways, I've given up in trying to move organizations along. I'm more interested in moving people along. If I can work with enough people, reach critical mass, I believe that organizations will change one way or the other. So one example of that is when I started, I became aware of podcasting and blogging. I immediately started blogging about the Technology Education Coordinator Special Interest Group, or TechSIG, meetings, and posting podcasts of the presentations and sharing those. I got pushback from the organization on that, but overwhelmingly.
I do recall that.
Yeah.
And the discussions in the forum.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But I.
Yeah, it was surprising.
It was surprising because here we are. We're the state's technology leaders and instructional technology or edtech leaders, and the expectation for me has always been, we're here about advocating for change, bringing about change in using these technologies, and it seemed that the one group that was responsible for bringing about those kinds of changes that were technology based and finding ways to integrate and use them to transform practice, they were the ones holding you back. But you know what? It was only a few people that were holding back, and I think that's the role of the organization, to maintain the status quo, to protect what is. And the people that were out in the field, other technology directors, coordinators, chief technology officers, and, you know, regular district specialists that form the membership of the Technology Education Coordinators Group, overwhelmingly said, you know, this is great stuff. We want it to keep happening. And so I have that support, and I'm grateful for that support. But that whole encounter taught me a valuable lesson, that if we can connect with people and help them become aware of the possibilities, then the organization will eventually, however slowly, change. It's just the way it takes. It just takes a long time to get it done. The other thing to consider is I've been fortunate in that I was able to. I have a Texas presence. When I started out with my writing, I was always grateful that I didn't have ambitions to control the world. I just wanted to be able to publish my writing to as many people in Texas as possible. And that's been a wonderful possibility. And now that when I started blogging, I mean, I got a worldwide audience. And it's just great. I mean, it is just great to be able to publish and share ideas and have other people write back. And there's nothing so exciting as seeing your writing in print. And, you know, people don't even have to pay me anymore. I'm just excited about seeing it out there. So, sorry.
Undoubtedly, your work is very critical to a lot of us who are looking for answers in the educational technology field. I mean, you put out some good stuff, and I know that we often look to your articles for advice on new technologies. And what you were saying about the putting in your own perspective, and I saw that through the TCEA forum, you know, that I've seen them even saying back in that situation, this is going to be off the record here, you know, that they discouraged that you and Ken writing about your perspectives on some of these things in theirs, particularly if they were not what they advocated. And I was really disappointed to see that. But definitely your work is valuable to all of us, and wanted you to know that we really do appreciate it. I've used a lot of it. Can you please tell me a little bit about your project with the Moodle at Northeast? Like, what was the existing conditions before y'all implemented the learning management system? Like, what problems and needs did y'all have, and who are your primary stakeholders, and maybe a little about the architecture if you have any information on that?
Okay. Well, let's clarify a few few things real quick. I noticed in the graphic organizer, it says Northeast ISD, Moodle Project. And I'm actually San Antonio ISD.
San Antonio, I meant, yes.
And the other thing is, let's just so I'm clear on the terms that I'm using, when I say learning management system, I'm not referring to Moodle or Blackboard or any one of those systems. I'm actually referring to a system that tracks professional development online and a sort of a professional development, professional learning tracking system. I see the Moodle and Blackboard as course management systems. And I have to keep all the terms separate because I actually have all these systems so in my district, so I want to make sure to sort of keep them aligned. A learning management system allows us to track professional development. What's neat about it is that you can deliver professional development or professional learning online through the learning management system and actually have it track your progress through an online module. Now, how you deliver those online modules, one way would be to use a course management system, a system like Moodle, that is SCORM compliant and will feed all the, I guess, the statistics, the data, to the learning management system. So that's, for us, that's the difference. Learning management system tracks professional development, whether it's face-to-face, instructor-led, in other words, as well as online or a mixture of the two. Moodle is actually the tool that we can use to sort of make connections. And as you know, being a veteran Moodle user, there's a million different applications for Moodle, and people are, it's easy to blur the lines. But the some of the possibilities that I'm thinking about using Moodle for go beyond just using it for, of course, traditional book studies, but that are held online, managing classes, whether for adults or for students. For example, some of our technology applications teachers are using Moodle at the middle school level for tech apps. Some of our elementary teachers are using Moodle to participate in online literature circles. And actually, I think one of the presentations, not this year, but next year at NEC, is going to be on sharing how that's happening. Of course, online literature circles is a pretty easy idea. It's regular traditional literature circles, but held online. And Moodle provides a vehicle for us to use that. We also facilitate district-wide meetings using Moodle. I know that when I think about how we're using Moodle and the way that a lot of others are using Moodle, I think that we are still very much in the infancy stages. It would be wonderful to have more people familiar with using Moodle in the district and aware of the possibilities. And my goal now is to sort of turn ownership or relinquish ownership of Moodle, in the sense that I don't want to be the one department in the district that uses Moodle. I want to be the one department in the district that encourages the use of Moodle by anyone and at every level, and that this doesn't have to be managed in the sense of we set it up and turn you loose. We go over all the rules and we say, go to it. If you get stuck, let us know. We'll monitor, provide support. But, you know, this is up to you, really, and encourage people to take Moodles and create their own online environments and just take off from there. So San Antonio ISD, not any ISD, we call it course management system versus the... So what's our implementation? Basically, when we started out with Moodle, I have really talented staff, and I'm so grateful that they are on board, and I'm glad that I can take credit for hiring them. I guess about four years ago, we were heavy duty into using FileMaker Pro online, and FileMaker Pro was a wonderful tool. We were using it for campus asset tracking, other sort of like a technology contacts database, because we had technology liaisons on every campus. And occasionally somebody would say, hey, ask your liaisons if they can give us some more information about this. So we figured out all the information that we needed, and we started collecting it. Well, FileMaker changed their version from whatever the version was at the time, I think it was 5, to something else. And when they changed that, I think it was maybe 6 to 7, and when they changed that, it resulted in, we have to buy a whole new product. All our existing solutions wouldn't work with it. And so we decided, this is just not going to, we either have to start over with a whole new system or invest several thousand dollars in the FileMaker solution. So we jumped into MySQL and PHP, and I had two staff members who were, one staff member was really gung-ho and knew how to do all this. You know, he'd go home at night and spend up late at night learning how to do this. And another guy who was really good at databases. So between the three of us, we worked, and I learned how to design a database in MySQL and PHP and put it all online. And I thought it was the greatest thing since whatever, but it's not that great. But when we switched to MySQL, it opened up all these possibilities. We could start blogging, and shortly after that, I think I started blogging. I started learning how to set up content management systems, blogs, and all the different more complex content management systems like Joomla and Mambo at the time. And there was just lots of different tools that sort of opened up. We had survey makers, etc. So by switching to MySQL, that gave us a freedom and access to all these open source tools, free software open source tools. And so that's what we jumped into. To launch Moodle, his name is Greg, had told me that he'd mentioned Moodle as soon as he came on board, but I really wasn't ready for Moodle because there was a lot of complexity, I felt, to it, and it was deep. It was a deep solution, and I was just trying to get a handle on all the other things. I was coming to a better understanding of it, and it took me a while to see it in use to really understand it. I think in the interim, I started using bulletin boards like PHPBB, which was recommended by Greg, and one of my other teammates was able to customize the solution, make it look the way that they wanted it to. And we started working with content management systems like Joomla, Mambo and Joomla, and that really sort of sealed the deal. I guess going to the idea of the past and problems and needs and stakeholders and existing conditions, we started down this road with content management systems and simple databases that built the groundwork and gave us the in, I guess, to use Moodle. When we first started, we noticed that the real need that was coming out was that schools had they didn't have a web presence. The web presence they had was, if they had one, was 3 or 4 years. Some had references to TOS, and how long TOS has been out and out of existence, and they still had references and old data. So we started working with campuses, building a relationship with them, and using content management system, so that all of this information wasn't concentrated or developed by a centralized webmaster, but instead we distributed the responsibility of maintaining the websites back to the campuses. I thought it was a great way of sharing that, distributed network of people maintaining their own sites, being responsible for their own sites. And this really sort of came to me after investing a lot of money in Macromedia Suite and purchasing it for our middle schools, doing tons of staff development, and then realizing that, as much as we provide staff development to these folks, they're never going to be a Macromedia expert. They're never going to be a Dreamweaver expert or Fireworks. No one was going to develop the level of expertise in a uniform, systematic way that would enable them to get all this done. And we were spending lots of money accomplishing that with no real benefits. So that's why we, locked up our web developer that we have in our office, locked her up in a classroom, I had my folks sort of twist our arm and say, you know, we're going to switch from macromedia to content management systems with the MySQL background and everything else. And so we made the switch. We were going strong for about a year and a half. Everybody was doing fantastic. And then we had new administration, new leadership come in. And the new leadership didn't understand. They wanted to switch to a centralized solution. They wanted a solution that would that they could manage and their programmers could handle, because they had a whole suite of programmers. Well, I thought that was, you know, obviously I thought, I didn't think that was right. And the reason I didn't think it was right is because we had spent so much time working with campuses to get them to this point, and now they were sort of, all that work would go out down the drain. And so I asked my team, well, what do you think we can do? And in the discussion that ensued, we came up with the idea of videotaping one campus principal and one department head, district department head, a director. And we videotaped that. We created a PowerPoint presentation that we've lost. But we created a PowerPoint presentation that sort of summarized all the benefits and what we've done. And we had those videos playing. And we talked about all the things that campuses could do, how they were enabled, how teachers would be enabled in creating their own websites. And it was kind of funny. We got put into a room. The entire technology department was there. And there were two presentations done that day. One was done by the programmers who were going to implement this centralized system. And then the other one was the content management system that we were using in the district. And I had my team do that presentation because I didn't want to be a part of – I wanted to sort of be on the outside of that and not get involved directly in advocating for one side or the other, even though everybody knew where I stood. And as we went through the presentation, they identified a list of criteria. And as we – you know, it was clear by the time that the presentations were done that we had pretty much unanimous support among all the directors. And there was about, I guess, 10 or 12 folks, directors, sitting around the table talking to our assistant superintendent. And at the end of the conversation, it was clear that the better solution for the district was the content management system. When I think about how things have progressed from that point on, we've seen adoption or mandate from the district level, from up above my head, that content management system that we're using, which happens to be Joomla, would be the one that gets used in the district. So we now have – we had achieved what we'd wanted all along, which was basically, you know, put the power of web editing and creation and pages in the hands of the campuses using a tool that requires the most non-techie person – or it doesn't require the most non-techie person to suddenly step outside of their role and go be a Dreamweaver and fireworks expert. And that worked great for our campus principals, et cetera. And as we add new solutions, that's one of the requirements. And I think the read-write web and the revolution that has brought about is that it is focused on non-techie people and sort of getting them to create using these tools that are very simple, very easy to use, and I think that's been sort of the saving grace, the benefit of the read-write web in my school district. So when I think about using Moodle with classroom teachers, it's not hard to teach them how to use this and get them at a level where they can start out and slowly build confidence over time. It's just a matter of managing and keeping track of who's doing what, when, and where, and trying to keep build that momentum, so that someday Moodle will be the accepted solution district-wide, just the way Joomla has been for our content. Sorry, I've gone on for quite a while now. I'll be quiet.
No, that's perfect. You know, exactly that point was one that I was headed toward, was how much do you think that accountability – stability of that accountability system that you have in your Moodle, how much do you think that helps you with buy-in on your stakeholder end, you know, proof of concept? So, per se.
When you say stability on the accountability side, what do you mean exactly?
Well, it takes a lot to make sure that the system is secure with student information, and you've got to show the district. I know my experience has been they only want a few students on there, and they want to test it to see, has anyone seen their information, and has anything leaked out? Do we have any vulnerabilities before they'll let the large whole on population on there? And, these little pilots, we do a lot of small pilots first, and I'm sure y'all do as well, but that accountability, being sure, certain that our data isn't going to be lost, how do you advise your leadership and decision makers that these systems can be trusted, especially when they're open source?
The benefit of working with free open source tools is that even though, my district, I've heard it said, is a Microsoft shop, they want to use all the Microsoft solutions, Microsoft SQL, et cetera, et cetera. But the value of using these free open source tools is that they are proven already outside of education, and they're in use by very big businesses who have a lot more users, a lot more demands than we have in education. And I'm never going to achieve a high level of usage on the MySQL databases, et cetera, that other businesses encounter. We did run into a few issues or hiccups at the beginning because we needed to sort of secure our MySQL databases. But, a lot of this is pretty turnkey. I mean, installing Moodle only takes, a few minutes, and so much of it's automated. The same is true for a lot of the other solutions. What you have to do is just sign on to all the lists, three or four lists that are necessary, and or keep track of what patches and upgrades need to be implemented. And one of the best things that I ever did when I started, in any job that I've been in, at the district level, or even service center level, has been to get a server. And I argued for one server when I first came on board in San Antonio ISD. I said, I need a server. This is one of my requirements, fundamental requirements when I took the job. And I said, I've got to have a server because we're going to do a lot of things with it. And if at the end of, the first year you decide that we haven't done anything with the server, then we can back down and you don't have to buy a second or a third. We're up to like four servers now in my office. They're not in my office. They're in the wide area network room. But they are servers that we are responsible for and we manage. And we have responsibility for those. There's a lot of things that are, outsourced to the technology department, the network side, the systems integration and operations. But there's still a lot of work that we do. I mean, it's great that they manage a lot of the backups, but we also manage backups. And so right now we're responsible for managing the district's website. So if something happens on the district server and the website disappears, they're going to call us, and we're going to have to take care of that. Now, I've thought about this a lot in the sense that we're at the Office of Instructional Technology. Should we be managing servers? And the answer is yes, you bet. We should be managing the tools that we need to get the job done in instructional technology. When you look at curriculum instruction, they haven't quite moved all the way, let's be honest, they haven't moved much towards using technology in any school district. And they're still paper and pencil, paper kinds of things. So their idea of using the web is rudimentary. Let's post some materials up there, information up there, and then forget about it for a few years. Technology department, we're in charge of all the servers, all the equipment. We want to make sure everything's working. We're going to customize this solution so that it fits our needs in terms of maintaining it and supporting it because let's be honest, there's a lot of technology out there. We can't just have anybody just doing their own thing. We have to be able to have a systematic approach to dealing with this. And in between those two groups, almost two extremes, I think is the educational technology or instructional technology group, pulling the technologies that are needed for instructional purposes and finding ways to make connections. And when we talk, I mean, we do manage our own servers as much as possible, but we also rely on the technology department to do the other things. And because we have figured out solutions to problems, because we have been transparent about the time that our server got hacked, and been transparent about those things, and then figured out exactly how it happened, why it happened, and then what we could do to fix that, then we gained their trust. And I think the same is true of curriculum department. If they can look at us and say, you know, we're going to start putting content into those Moodles because we know that you're going to do everything you can to make sure that that data remains there and doesn't get lost or stolen or whatever, then, you know, we'll trust you. And it's something that you build over time, those relationships. I've been in my current position for 5 years. I wouldn't say that I have complete trust from any group, but I have complete trust in my team and the work that I can that we can do. We're going to make mistakes. Those things happen. It's just the tools have to be available, and we have to be willing to have those open conversations. Sometimes politics plays in, and in a lot of ways, those politics may change the they do change the dynamics of how things work. I may think that using, a Moodle would be the best solution for a problem, but I remember my first associate superintendent, he said the best solution is not to use the Moodle at all. It's not to use anything, because he didn't want to get teachers or allow teachers the opportunity to stick their foot in their mouth online and have a record of it. But, you know, there's lots of learning opportunities that are lost when you take that on or off approach. I don't know if I answered your question.
Absolutely. That was great. That many more questions pop up from that. But let me ask you this one. You mentioned that you personally learned how to use MySQL and PHP and a number of the other languages and new technologies that these systems are built with. How do you think that has helped you advise on the design, development, or decision-making for the systems that you want to put in place?
Well, one of the neat things that I'm able to do is I have, like I said, a great team that I can rely on to install and maintain these solutions. But if I want to find out how to install a Moodle or model how to install Moodle to other people, and set up a solution for another school district, whether it's, me helping out other folks or actually doing consulting, I'm able to do that, and I'm able to do that on any computer that I want. As you probably know, and I'm sure a lot of folks that are listening know, is that MySQL, PHP, it comes prepared in wonderfully nice packages for whether, you know, Windows, Macintosh, or GNU Linux. So it's easy to set up these kinds of solutions for the different platforms so that you can turn any computer, whether it's a desktop machine, a laptop, into that. And so what I have always done is, since I learned how to do that, you know, several years ago, I know how to turn my laptop into a server, and therefore I'm able to experiment with different installations of content management systems, blogging solutions, blogging platforms, as well as Moodle course management systems. And if I want to install PHP BB, if I want to install Moodle, if I want to install B2 Evolution as one example of a blogging platform, or if I want to install multi-user WordPress, I'm able to do that and see how it might work. And then I can have conversations about how we might extend the use of these tools for instructional applications or professional learning support. And that's been invaluable to me because, you know, I don't have to completely rely on other people to do these things for me, even though as a director, to be honest, as a director, I rely on my staff to do, you know, a significant part of the how-to stuff. But because I have a certain level of comfort with using these tools, I'm able to do these things. And you know, then I can go and ask and say, you know what, I see that multi-user WordPress has finally gotten to a point where it's a good blogging platform that we might be able to use. What do you think about using that instead of B2 Evolution, which is what we officially use in the district to support blogging?
Well, speaking of that, you just mentioned that you compare the systems and WordPress, for example, you've noticed that it's come out with some new features that meet new needs. How do you keep up with or evaluate? Do you personally evaluate these systems, or do you have a great source online that you go to? What measurements do you use to evaluate the new components, either add-ons to the systems that you have, maybe WordPress or Moodle, or a totally new system, maybe adding DimDim or something to your, I know that y'all have that on your Moodle as well. How did you compare all the products that you mentioned in your article in Education World, you wrote in Broadcast Learning, of all the different tools that you evaluated? How do you do that?
Well, I really appreciate you asking that question because in the past, if I had to answer that question, I'd say, well, I tried out every single one of these tools all on my own and learned how to do it. But since I started blogging, I feel like I am at the center of a really incredible network. And the rest of that title for that article that was just published in Education World, thanks for mentioning it, is the power of networked learning. And the reason that it's the power of networked learning is that all these different, you can now learn so much from other people that are online. Matter of fact, I was so excited about this idea that I wrote a whole article about it. It's building your own personal learning network. And put it online on my wiki as one of the links that people need to see. And I give some advice to folks who want to get started. So what are the tools that you need to get started? And there are several tools that I really deem as essential. One of the first ones is getting a Delicious account. If you're not familiar with Delicious, it's a social bookmarking tool. We learn so many things throughout our day, throughout our week, and often those are lost in our email or end up someplace. No easy way for us to handle all that. Delicious allows us to sort of put it all together in one place, tag it with words that come to mind. And, you know, one of the things that's sort of mind-boggling for people who don't use Delicious, I know it was for me, and that's why I'm sharing the story, is that how do you remember all the different bookmarks that you get? Well, what I do is when I make up a tag, a keyword to describe something that I'm bookmarking, I just ask a simple question, you know, what comes to mind first? What's my first impression? And those are the words that I use to tag. And it's been wonderful because even if I forget that I've actually been to a website, if I look something up by a certain tag, if I hit that word, I actually see the original bookmark that I made and any notes that I might have made on that site, and everything sort of rushes back to me, and I remember everything. So I use Delicious. I also have a network of other people that use Delicious, and they have added me to their network, and I've added them to my network. And we're actually able to share links back and forth. So, for example, I'll just share this. I ran into a website on DigiGirls, and this is something I blogged about recently, which is a Microsoft-supported camp for girls, you know, encouraging girls to use technology or to enter the technology field, because there's been research that shows that girls are not as involved in using technology, et cetera. Well, I have a 14-year-old daughter, So what I did was I tagged it, and I tagged it for her as well. Delicious allows me to do that. So that when she checks her Delicious, she'll see that I have tagged something for her. And then if she finds something that she's interested in and that she wants me to know about because I'll be interested in it, she tags that for me. And I started using this with our technology applications teachers. I would tag something for them. They would tag something for me. These are personal tools that you learn how to use, and they bring information to you. Another powerful tool that I've learned how to get in contact with is Twitter. And Twitter.com asks a simple question, what are you doing? Matter of fact, I'm on Twitter right now, and the question is, what are you doing? Well, Amanda, I don't know if you know it, but I was so excited about what you shared with me about Moodle and FreeMind and putting the graphic organizer online that you can collapse the map that I Twittered about it, and I took a screenshot of the map that you sent me and I posted it online, and then I shared it via Twitter with other people. Now, nobody's responded to me about this particular tweet, this particular piece of information that I shared, but eventually someone might, because Twitter is on 24/7. That means that there's people around the world that are contributing and responding to each other. So I'm actually tapped into a network of worldwide educators who are focused on using technology to transform teaching, learning, and leading in the classroom and in schools, and they're sharing how they're doing that. And I'm learning things all the time. One of the things that came to me was, certainly for the broadcast learning article, was something called Ustream.tv. Now, I'll be honest, I don't watch TV. I don't really care too much about it. There's only a few shows that I'm hooked on that I have to watch. But I didn't know, I haven't really paid attention to a lot of video technologies or these kinds of technologies because I'm more about text and audio, really more about text. But I learned about Ustream TV, and I was invited to participate in a conversation that educators were having. Now, you couldn't have this conversation at school because Ustream TV is blocked, but there are educators online at all hours of the day for us, where it's, you know, normal hours for them, and they are having these conversations. There's other tools like Flash Meeting, which I also mentioned in that article, and, of course, Illuminate and Wimba and lots of tools that we can use to accomplish the same kinds of things, but I wouldn't have found out about most of those if I had not been using Twitter.com. And I think I only started using Twitter about 3 or 4 months ago, and I didn't get it. I didn't have an idea of why I should be sharing with other people what I'm doing in the course of my day. But if what I'm sharing is about improving teaching, learning, and leading in schools with other people, and other people in my network are sharing that information, what they're doing with me, I immediately come into possession of lots of great information that you may not run into because you're not part of the network. You're disconnected from the network. So that's the second tool. Delicious was the first. Twitter is the second. The third tool is blogging. When I started blogging 3 years ago, I had no idea that I would be having a conversation or starting a worldwide conversation with people. But people started visiting. I started blogging different places, technology and learning as a website. I blogged for them for a while. I occasionally contribute to Dr. Scott McCloud's Leader Talk, which is a blog for administrators. And all of those have brought me in contact with lots of different people. And now when I look at my blog, I see that I have 1,010 subscribers. You know, 1,010 people thought that what I was writing, the sort of just-in-time kind of learning that I'm going through, my reflections on teaching, learning, and leadership, they thought it was worthwhile to subscribe so that the content would come to them. The benefit of blogs is that you're reflecting on what you're learning. Blogging isn't necessarily about publishing or writing to other people. It's about sharing what you're learning as it happens. And then, of course, the benefit of that is that other people start to reflect on what you're sharing, and then they may extend your learning because they'll give you some feedback that you hadn't considered or take you, what you've written in a completely different direction than you had imagined, and so you learn things. So Delicious, Twitter, blogging, those are three of the personal learning tools that I've grown familiar with. The third tool or the next tool that really is a Google Reader or something to manage real simple syndication or RSS subscriptions. When we think about the web, I was working with Learning About Learning 2007, which is a conference that took place earlier this year. And when I say working, that doesn't mean I was consulting or anything. I was just having a conversation with them, and they said that they would cover my cost, and I could show up as a member of the press. I said, I'll blog your conference. That sounds interesting. It's education-related. Be a lot of schools there from San Antonio, Texas. And they said, well, great. Well, you know, we'll give you a press pass. And I said, well, does that get me in free? And they said, yes. And I said, okay, great, I'll be there. So I was there, and I sort of blogged what happened at that conference. But what I was surprised about is that their website was still what's called Web 1.0. In other words, there was no RSS feed. If I wanted to see any changes had taken place on that website, I'd actually have to go there and see them. Rather than subscribe to that website, like I would subscribe to a blog or Moodle or a content management system, and then when changes took place, those changes would appear in my Google Reader, because that's how the Google Reader works. It goes, the site that is publishing sends out a file. That file is read by the reader, and then I see the latest changes or updates. There's a great video on this. I'm doing a terrible job explaining it, but the video does a wonderful job. Leela Faber's CommonCraft.com video, and it's RSS in plain English. And because I subscribe to over 300 feeds, 300 RSS feeds in a variety of areas, journalism, education, technology, techie stuff, just whatever I'm interested in, as well as a few areas where I'm not that interested in, but I see the value of something, I'm able to learn things that I never would have learned if I had just sat around reading a magazine or waiting for the occasional conference or waiting for my neighbor in the cubicle next to me to come over and say, hey, guess what I just learned? You know, I learned a lot. So learning becomes less of an event that happens at certain instances, and something that happens 24/7 for me. So I'm always learning. I'm always getting feedback. You know, if I go look at my RSS aggregator, which is Google Reader, and I have, you know, over 1,000 entries in there that popped up, and I can go in and read those. I don't have to read all of them. I just read the ones that I'm interested in. But the ones that I'm interested in are probably ones that I'm going to end up blogging about. I can't blog about 1,000 things or even 200 things, but I blog about 5 or 6 of those. I might add about 7 or 8 of those to my delicious links, my bookmarks. And if I learn something new or if I do something exciting, I share that in my blog or share it via Twitter, and then everybody else finds out about those things. Even if I contribute only one thing a day to the worldwide conversation, I have done a heck of a lot more than what I would have done 5 years ago and contributed more. I have over 4,000 entries on my blog sharing my insights and understandings into using the technologies. It's about just a whole world that's opened up of the things that you can learn about. So Personal Learning Network is how I learn stuff, and I don't expect anybody to get there overnight. I mean, it's obviously taking me 3 years to get to this level of just appreciating it, and I have a lot more to learn.
Well, Miguel, a lot of people in the educational field use your blogs and your writings to, you know, improve their own learning, and, you know, you're well published online and in many notable educational technology journals. How does this type of outreach and your efforts in writing, how does that help you gain credibility, and how do you think it improves your buy-in as a consultant on topics such as that, you know, either with your employer or maybe when you're working with other districts outside and advising them on systems? Do you think that your online presence contributes to your credibility as a consultant on these topics?
I think it does. I've gotten more requests for keynote addresses as a blogger than I ever got as a occasional publisher in Texas magazines. And the reason why is that I'm able to reach a broader audience. And, you know, it's always great to hire people from outside of your area. I recently did a keynote presentation for Education Service Center in Michigan. They Skyped me in for the conversation, which I thought was just fantastic. It saved me the travel It was snowing over there, and I had a chance to do my whole presentation to them. I posted all my materials online. My whole presentation is a podcast. We did it live. We were able to answer questions, have those real conversations. They could see me. I could sort of see them every once in a while when the video was right. But it's just one of the things that I learned early on as a writer, and I really see myself as a writer who happens to work in education, rather than, although I am an educator, I mean, there's no taking that away, but I identify more now as I get older and look back, is that I was writing and sharing about what I was doing as it was happening to me, and the ways that I could share those things and engage others improved over time as the technologies got better. One of the things that I found very helpful, when I started publishing my writing, I was in Mount Pleasant Independent School District, a district in East Texas. The city of Mount Pleasant has about 13,000 people. And my wife and I used to joke that we could fit all 13,000 in the auditorium here in San Antonio. And we could fit the entire pop. Well, I don't know about 13,000. Let me back up. Maybe that was a previous district with 3,000 people. But it was just amazing that we could put everybody in. And I was able to share my published work with my superintendent, assistant superintendent at the time, and they thought it was just fantastic. They shared it with the school board and everybody else because their school district was getting free press. I moved to different school district. I moved to a school district here in San Antonio, Harlandale ISD. And when I got there, I had just published an article, and I'd written the article months before I came to the district. No idea of what the current situation was in my new school district. And I remember my boss at the time walked up to me and says, "Did you write this about what's going on here in the school district?" And I remember saying no, and I'm sure she didn't believe me. But the fact was that, and that was an important lesson because it taught me that these kinds of changes are happening everywhere. They're happening in your school district, they're happening in my school district, they're happening in a small school district, large school district. And I was writing about the changes as I understood they were happening from my perspective in an East Texas district. But when I got to a big, a medium-sized San Antonio school district, the changes were just as true there as they were over there. And either way, the power of publishing the writing and making it available online to lots of different people, it did raise my credibility with others. And it gave me instant name recognition. People know who I am. People know my face. When I worked to work for, like, let's say, the Education Service Center Region 20, what was really funny was that you're not allowed to publish, you're not allowed to put things out there without the explicit permission of the executive director. And this was several years ago. I don't know if they still do that. And I thought that was a crazy thing, so I published all my writing in secret, although it's hard to imagine, you know, if she picked up the right magazine, she would have seen, oh, you're published, and it says, and for a while there, I wasn't even showing where I was working. My immediate supervisor knew that I was publishing, and she cheered me on, but I was grateful for that. Now that I'm blogging and publishing in a variety of different mediums, online, as well as print magazines, you know, monthly column in Education World, as well as TCEA's Tech Edge. I just had an article come out this month in March in the School Administrator, the American Association of School Administrators. The title of the article is Wiki While You Work, and I really worked hard on this article because I wanted to make a connection with administrators. I wanted to connect to Good to Great and Jim Collins' work there, and which is often cited among administrators and leaders, and make the connection that they can use wikis to support the work of leadership. And I sent a copy to my boss. I sent a copy to my superintendent and deputy superintendent, assistant superintendent. And I grew up as a Catholic, and still am. And the reason I mention that is, you know, it's not good to, you know, to brag about your what you're doing and brag about what's going on. But people don't honestly don't know anything about you unless you tell them, unless you share with them the information. And I my dad would put it like this: you got to toot your own horn. And I hated that characterization of tooting your own horn because you're bragging. But I've come to understand now that it's important to share what you're learning with other people. It's not necessarily tooting your own horn. It's trying to reach as large an audience as possible so that when the word gets back, as it will, no matter what we think, it always comes back to you. And we want that word to come back and say, wow, you know, Amanda Hefner, she's working in your district? Wow, you are lucky. You are really lucky that she's in your district because she's been involved in all these different projects. You know, we follow her online, and all of that sort of comes back and gives you a credibility and sort of a and support. It's sort of like you have a wind beneath your wings there. It sort of just carries you higher and higher. Whether that's acknowledged at work right away or not won't matter. In the long run, eventually it will. If you stay in one place long enough, people will find out what you're doing. And if you're transparent about what you're doing, you're saying, hey, you know, these tools are fantastic tools to use with kids, with teachers, to enhance what we're doing. My goal is to do this, to accomplish this. There are certain challenges that we may have to overcome and work through together, and we have to do that because, you know, it's about changing the teaching and learning environment. And then eventually those changes will happen. But if you don't share about it with as many people as possible, nobody's going to know anything, and it'll become something that's between you and a few people. I just really want to emphasize that again. It's critical that you share what you're learning with other people, with everybody. It's critical that you capture what other people are learning and share that with others, with their permission, of course, and with, of course, your encouragement. But you want to externalize all your knowledge, externalize what you're learning, what you're sharing, what others are sharing, as much as possible so that it becomes part of the dialogue. Because if you're not having those conversations with people, then they have no idea. And this is something that's maybe obvious to a lot of folks, but it wasn't obvious to me. I was always sensitive as a teacher, as an administrator, of what things to talk about, what not to talk about, and when to keep my mouth shut. And maybe that's part of my Latino heritage. But it's just critical that you bring these things up in a way that that you have a conversation about it. And there's a great book, and unfortunately I don't have it with me. Otherwise, I usually try to keep the books that I like to talk about nearby, but I've written about it. It's the title of the book is Fierce Conversations, and I don't know if you've read that book, but Fierce, have you?
I saw it referenced on your blog, I believe.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it looks really good.
One of the quotes out of that book, let me see, and just so you know what I'm doing in the background here is I'm going to my Delicious and I'm going to do a search on Fierce and see what pops up. And the author is Susan Scott. I've now pulled up my blog entry using my Delicious. And she talks about the 7 principles of fierce conversations. She says, master the courage to interrogate reality. Since reality is changing so much, we have to keep revisiting it. And it's not all right just to base our perception of reality, our story of what's happening on what's happening. We have to sort of focus in on what's actually happening. And because things are changing so quickly, it's important that we keep bringing it up and asking ourselves, what is it that's happening? One of the other pieces of advice is take responsibility for your emotional wake. The conversation is the relationship that you're having with others, and that's their understanding. So they don't know or they aren't aware of all the things that you may be thinking about. You know, I know when I have a conversation with someone where I'm trying to share something and they may not be open to it, or vice versa, I believe that maybe I'm having this complicated conversation inside my head about reactions about what's going on. But they have no clue about what I'm sharing, so it's important to sort of bring that out. One of the key quotes that sort of sticks in my mind, which has been very useful in my work, is that a managed conversation is a failed conversation. That means that if we're thinking about all these, you know, if I'm thinking about what I can say or what I can't say or whatever, and you might as well forget it. That's you've already failed. That conversation is not going to work. So you have to come right out and be transparent and open about what it is that you're trying to get at. We're in education. We're not in business. We're in education to improve teaching and learning environments, to impact kids, and we have to be willing to be open and transparent. People that aren't open and transparent about what their agenda is, what they're doing, those people will be quickly picked out of the crowd and said, you know, that person's not really here for the reasons they're supposed to be here for. They're here to, you know, push their own agenda or whatever. Even as a consultant, I think it's important, you know, to be open and share those ideas. So that's sort of what I'm about. And being a blogger has sort of helped me get to that point because I wasn't there before. It's taken me 3 years to get to this point where I'm trying to, and I have to use this, be a conversational cartographer, as Susan says in her book. I'm trying to map a way towards deeper authenticity. I'm trying to get at what we're really trying to talk about here, but we're afraid to because of, you know, we've become accustomed to dealing with things in certain ways. So we've sort of strayed off of the Moodle path, but I think
it's part of that problem and overcoming
the leadership challenges that are key to getting new technologies in.
Well, certainly the focus of our conversation was on effective consulting, and you have covered so many bases, and this is, your conversation's very valuable, and I wanted to tell you that, you know, your work and blogging of the good, bad, and ugly of educational technology has certainly benefited so many educators, and, I think I really appreciate you sharing your insights on the importance of tuning your own horn and using the social networking tools that you showed us to share the learning and the expertise and talent online. I think that was great advice for building rapport and credibility as a consultant is, like you said, externalizing your knowledge online. And it does take time to do that. I think my biggest struggle in doing that is when do I find the time to put all my thoughts down on paper or, you know, blogging, and maybe when I finish school I'll have more time to do that, but I have a lot of ideas running through my head that I'd love to put down as well, and I know that I need to, and that's, you know, where I struggle is the time, but I certainly understand the merit, and you've really helped me visualize that as well. And thank you so much for all of your great advice,